Hey, true crime besties. Welcome back to an all-new episode of Serialistly. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to an all-new episode of Serialistly with me, Annie Elise. It is Thursday, which means we are doing headline highlights, and boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about. And don't worry, I've been seeing all the DMs. I appreciate all of you guys checking in on me. I know Casey Anthony joined social media, and oh my God, do I have some thoughts. So we are certainly going to talk about that, not only about her joining social media, but her approach to all of it, what I believe she's trying to do, very strategically and calculated and gross, and we're going to talk about all of that. But we also have some more updates to talk about in other cases, as well as some breaking new cases. And one of the other updates that we're going to get to has to do with Micah Miller. You may remember that case from several months back. We talked about it. Don't worry if you don't know what I'm talking about. I will give a recap. But her husband, John Paul Miller, is now right back in the throes of the spotlight because once again, he has had some horrible accusations made against him. This time, he is being slapped with a lawsuit by a minor in regards to rape. So, a scumbag I think we can all agree on through and through. And again, I'll give a little more context into the backstory before I dive into all of that. But some other new cases breaking. We have some parents who have now been charged with neglect and abuse of their 10-year-old son. And not just that, they had to really put the cherry on top of being an evil, vile human being, and they forced his siblings to also wail on him and beat him up, like as if they couldn't get any more disgusting. We're going to talk a little bit about the tragic death of Gene Hackman and some theories and some speculation going on as to what may have been the cause, because while there are still not a lot of answers, initially they ruled it and said that there was not foul play suspected. But now they're questioning and saying they do think that the death is suspicious, especially when the dog piece of it is involved. So we'll touch on that briefly. We also are going to talk about the infamous Alexander brothers. And we talked again about them a while back, not in a big way on headline highlights, but they are the real estate moguls who, you know, buy and sell all sorts of luxury real estate. And they have been accused of horrific sexual assaults and like massive amounts. So we are going to talk about some updates going on with them. And there's just a lot we got to go through. So I'm going to shut up. I'm going to put the zipper on my mouth now for a moment, and I'm going to get right into it. And I want to start with these parents, because these parents, as I said, are now facing charges for zip tying their 10-year-old child's hands, then forcing siblings to just beat him up. So let's talk about it. Now, this story is definitely a crazy one, and I honestly cannot even wrap my head around it as a parent, as a human being, as just a normal person. But a couple in Indiana are facing child neglect charges, and you truly are going to be shocked when I tell you why, because police are saying that these parents tied up their 10-year-old son, did not feed him, and then literally told his siblings to beat him up, which this is just beyond demented, because why are you even parents if you are also using your children to beat up your other children, then tying him up, not giving him food? I mean, it is pure evil. So the couple's names and their ages are 38-year-old Melody Rose Greenwood and 36-year-old Adam John Greenwood. They were arrested last week after they brought their 10-year-old son to the doctor for an exam. And this never ceases to amaze me, because in so many of these child abuse cases, we often see that when the abuse just escalates, it gets to a point of finally needing intervention from a medical team, from a doctor. So they either take them to the hospital, they take them for a local checkup at the doctor, they do something. And it's like, this moment is inevitable. And why are you now showing concern and taking them to the doctor? I believe it's because you need somebody to intervene and save their life because you've gone too far. But it's almost like a blueprint for a lot of these cases. But anyway, these doctors saw that this little boy was extremely skinny. So from there, the red flag started going off and they accused the parents of neglect and abuse. And the doctors immediately reported what they had found to the police. So the authorities went to their home to go check on this little boy and follow up on this visit. And that's when they saw that he had seven other siblings. Which honestly, I'm just glad that this is a case where the family was reported and the cops immediately took it seriously and went and checked up on this child, because there are so many cases and instances where nobody does anything. So all of the kids at this home were homeschooled, which is another telltale sign that we often talk about anytime children are, it doesn't mean all the time if they're homeschooled. I know a lot of people choose homeschooling for their own reasons, which I completely respect and understand. But when there also are signs and history or patterns of abuse happening in the home, we oftentimes see that the child, or in this case, all of the children, are homeschooled because they don't want teachers seeing anything, any sort of suspicious activity, somebody noticing maybe a bruise, a mark, a behavior change, long sleeves in the summertime, things like that. So when they approach this home and they see that all of these children are being homeschooled, and also they see that the dynamic between the entire family was a little off-putting, I'll say, that's when alarm bells really started to go off. So when confronted about their son, they said that he was being punished because he was grounded. The mom also said that his diet mostly consisted of canned foods, vegetables, and protein. The 10-year-old was also not allowed to eat any snacks or have any junk food. Those were the rules. However, what was interesting is that every other sibling in the family was allowed to eat normally. The parents let all of these other kids eat snacks, eat junk food, fast food, I mean literally whatever they wanted. They only singled out this one young 10-year-old boy. So then the siblings started talking to the police and sharing, you know, more of the details and not really masking the truth like the parents were trying to mask. And the siblings told the police that in addition to being tied up and in addition to the bizarre restrictions on his food, this 10-year-old boy was also forced to stand up against the wall for 10 to 12 hours a day, all because of his behavior. If the boy turned around or if he talked at all at any point during this, the parents would then tell his siblings and instruct his siblings that they needed to beat him up as a punishment. The kids also said that one night their parents zip-tied the boy's hands for an entire night. One of the police officers noted in their report that they saw scars and marks on this little boy's wrists. And I mean, the abuse, it just goes on and on and on. This little boy, he wasn't allowed to play games. He wasn't allowed to watch movies. He wasn't allowed to play video games like the rest of his siblings were. And also these hours that he was just standing up straight against the wall, not moving, his parents would put a towel on top of his head. I mean, this is what they claimed to be their form of discipline, which I don't understand what makes a parent treat their child like that. And literally to also instruct his siblings to beat him up and turn them all against him, it is sick. It is like some kind of twisted punishment for all of them, because obviously the kids don't enjoy participating in this either. I just don't understand why they singled out this one particular child so much either. I mean, even if he did have behavioral problems, sure, ground him, take away his phone, take away the computer. You don't wail on him. You don't instruct his brothers and sisters to do that. You don't starve him. You don't zip tie his hands. This is just beyond parental intervention and punishment. So the mother, Melody, is facing 3 counts of neglect, and Adam is facing 2 counts. The two of them were released from jail after paying their bond, which infuriates me, because Melody's bond was only set at $15,000, while Adam's was set at only $10,000. But the Department of Child Services said that the investigation is ongoing. I tried to find information to see if the children were still in their custody, but I couldn't find clear information on it, although I would assume that they probably have been removed from the custody, because anytime there is some sort of investigation with CPS, usually, especially if there are charges, the children have been removed from the home. But again, I couldn't quite get a read on that and get accuracy, so I'm hopeful that that's the case, but I can't say with certainty, which is also very alarming considering that they made bail, that their bail amounts were so small, and that they could potentially have access to their children. Although, again, I don't think that they do. But cases like this, where not only are parents abusive towards their children, but then they turn the entire family against a child, it breaks my heart, because this 10-year-old kid, I would imagine, probably assumed a lot of this was his fault, that he deserved it, that he was singled out because something was wrong with him and that his siblings were more loved than him. And that is just heartbreaking to try to wrap your mind around. Anybody who just is excluded that way, especially by parents, their loved ones, people who are supposed to protect and love them, it just adds this very unsettling layer on top of all of it. Now let's quickly talk about the mysterious death of Gene Hackman, his wife, and their dog, because there have been a lot of questions about this, and I'm not going to go into a crazy amount of detail, but I do want to talk about it because a lot of you have been asking my thoughts on it. And it definitely is a hard story to wrap your head around because it is super mysterious. But as I said, famous actor Gene Hackman was found dead last week, and it wasn't just him. His wife and his dog were also found dead, which was crazy because all three of them were found deceased in the home. And first, I just want to mention, too, how sad this is because I'm sure most of you guys do know who Gene Hackman is, even if the name doesn't ring a bell. He's been in movies like The French Connection, The Royal Tenenbaums, Welcome to Mooseport, my personal favorite, Heartbreakers. I don't know if you guys saw that movie. He's the one who has, like, the smoking and the hacking, and he's the old guy that they try to, like, you know, con and all that. But anyway, so he was in all these movies, but then in 2004, he just totally disappeared from the Hollywood scene. He stopped acting completely, and then he moved to New Mexico to live a quiet life with his wife. I guess he just wanted to get as far away as possible from that movie star type lifestyle, I'm not sure, but that's exactly what he and his wife did. Now, his wife, who, by the way, was around 30 years younger than him, her name was Betsy Arakawa, and she was a classical pianist. So the two of them lived a very peaceful and quiet life right outside of Santa Fe. They had a home on about 12 acres of land that was tucked up in the mountains in a gated community and just lived peacefully. Family and friends said that the two of them loved each other very much, that they had a great relationship. They were married for 34 years. They said that Betsy took amazing care of Gene as well, despite Gene now being in his 90s. And despite that, they were both still in great shape, and they stayed healthy throughout all of those years. They were also really liked and respected in the Santa Fe community. But then last Wednesday, the entire world was left shocked when it was announced that Gene, Betsy, and one of their dogs, just one, were discovered in their home dead. The three of them were found by maintenance workers with the front door left open. But the authorities are saying that they could have been dead for days, maybe even weeks before being found.
On Wednesday, February 26, 2025, at approximately 1:45 p.m., Santa Fe County Sheriff's deputies were dispatched to 1425 Old Sunset Trail, where Gene Hackman, 95, and his wife Betsy Arakawa, 65, and a dog were found deceased. An individual arrived to perform maintenance on the residence became concerned after receiving no answer and contacted neighborhood security to conduct a welfare check. Security then checked on the residence and observed Mr. Hackman and Miss Arakawa on the ground unresponsive through a window and called 911. Deputies arrived and gained access to the residence where they observed Mrs. Arakawa deceased. They continued the search of their home and located Mr. Hackman in a separate area of the residence, also deceased. A German Shepherd was also found deceased, and two other dogs who appeared healthy were located on the property.
Now, what's so strange about this is how they were found dead, but in different rooms. And the reason I say that is because initially when we heard this news, I think when they had said probably not foul play, we all suspected, okay, maybe carbon monoxide poisoning, maybe some other type of poisoning, maybe some sort of drug overdose, to where they were together. But the fact that they were in different rooms, it does add a little bit of a mysterious layer to that a little bit, because if it was something that was a freak accident or something of that nature, why weren't they together? And let me talk a little bit more before I get ahead of myself. So nothing is really confirmed or set in stone, but the police have said that the circumstances are what they are quoting suspicious. Suspicious enough to launch an investigation into everything. So far, they've conducted an autopsy and they have searched the entire home, but a specific cause of death has not been determined or shared publicly so far.
An autopsy was performed. Initial findings noted no external trauma to either individual. The manner and cause of death has not been determined. The official results of the autopsy and toxicology reports are pending.
On Gene and Betsy, there were no signs of trauma or bruising, and there were also no immediate signs of foul play, as I said. So, like I said, at first there were theories of the gas leak, maybe carbon monoxide, but there were also no signs of that. There were also some theories about an open pill bottle that was found near Betsy. The pill bottle was found open and the prescription pills were kind of laying scattered around the room. But police later said that these pills were Tylenol, thyroid medication, and also a drug to treat high blood pressure. Certainly not anything like oxycodone or anything alarming. I mean, it's not very likely that all of those pills were the cause of death for all three of them. One thing that has been confirmed, though, from the autopsy is that the couple likely died 9 days before they were found. Now, a lot of people believe that Gene could have died from natural causes, especially since he had a heart disease and a pacemaker. But what's kind of mind-boggling and on everybody's mind is how the wife and dog also passed away at the same time, in the same time frame at least. So police are saying that they're going through all of the cell phone records, the security cameras, the photos, just really any data that they can get their hands on so that they can piece everything together. But even if Gene did pass away of old age, natural causes, something to do with his heart and his pacemaker, remember, Betsy was 30 years younger than him. And where does the dog come into play with this? Some people have suggested maybe it's like The Notebook or something like that, that they were so in love, they were together for 34 years, that she couldn't live without him, so she took her own life after he passed away. That's possible. Then could the dog have passed away from starvation, from getting into the pills? I don't know. But the community and their close friends are, of course, devastated, and especially their families. Gene's kids said that this definitely came as a shock since, like I said before, he was still, even though he was in his 90s, he was in great physical shape. Betsy and Gene would do yoga, they would go to Pilates, and Gene was even still riding his bike up until a year ago. So, I mean, it's all just very, very sad. A major loss for the world and for their families for sure. And everybody who has described Gene said he never acted like one of those famous Hollywood actors. One of his best friends even said that he didn't really care about himself. He was just more interested in getting to know other people. So the investigation is still ongoing, and this is definitely something I will be keeping an eye on, and hopefully answers can be found. But until then, all we can really do is just send love to Betsy and Gene's friends and family and hope that everybody is beginning to heal. Now, I want to talk with you guys about Micah Miller and her husband, John Paul Miller, and the skeezy stuff he's been accused of, how a lot of people have suggested he's responsible for Micah's death. I believe he was as well, indirectly, not a murderer necessarily, but I guess you could call it murder by proxy in a way. So now he's also being accused of raping a minor, which is very interesting because we also know he groomed Micah from a very young age. So I'm going to talk to you all about the newest updates coming out in that case, but first we are going to take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors. Okay, so here we go. Let's get into the John Paul Miller of it all. If you guys are familiar with the Micah Miller case, there was recently this little bombshell update that was dropped about her husband, John Paul Miller, because he has been accused of rape. But before I get into all of that, I do want to give a short recap on Micah Miller for those who are not familiar with it. And I also will link a deep dive into the Micah Miller case in this episode so that if you are intrigued and if this piques your interest, you can go take a listen. But basically, Micah was a woman from North Carolina and she was found dead in a state park last April. Her death was ultimately deemed a suicide, but her family was not buying it, and neither was a lot of the public or the media. A lot of people believed that her husband, John Paul Miller, was the cause and root of Micah Miller taking her own life, taking a gun and choosing it, because he really came into the spotlight when she was found dead because the two of them had been going through a very tumultuous divorce. And many also believed that he was abusing her, he was tracking her, he was controlling her, he was brainwashing her, and there was definitely a lot that was circulating around this guy. However, I will say, police have always maintained that Micah's death was a suicide and that there was no solid evidence linking John Paul to her death. But like I said, the relationship, he was accused of grooming her in the church from a very young age, and he actually cheated on his previous wife with Micah while she was young, while she was in the church, while he was grooming her. So then it was almost as though history was repeating itself, and when Micah, I mean, I don't know how else to say it, aged out, I guess you could say, but got older and he started looking at other people, cheating. He is a narcissist, in my opinion, and he started tracking her. She has allegations and written documentation where she noticed GPS on her car, where he was controlling their finances. He was brainwashing her. He was manipulating her to where she was so fearful of her life. She felt like there was no escape other than to take her own life. So again, I will link the deep dive because it is a very interesting, fascinating case. To me, it kind of gives, what does it give? It gives Barry Morphew meets Drew Peterson, not to be confused with Scott Peterson, meets, I don't know, who's another scumbag husband? I don't know. Those are two great examples. But it just kind of shows, too, that he's had like a history of being a creep and a sketchy guy. So now, even though people haven't really talked much about the Micah Miller case in the last several months, now an anonymous woman from Indiana recently dropped a complete bombshell because she alleges that John Paul raped her back in 1998 when he was 19 years old and she was only 14 years old. John Paul was reportedly working as a youth church leader at the time of this. And remember, it all goes back to the church, right? I'm not saying with every case, but with JP. It all goes back to the church. That's where he met Micah. That's where he started grooming her. All of these things. Now, the complaint also talks about JP's father, as well as the All Nations Cathedral Church and Solid Rock Ministries. Now, JP's father was the one in charge of the church that this girl was attending at the time. And the woman remembers the day that the assault happened very vividly. She alleges that JP took her into his father's office, that he immediately started being sexually aggressive, and that when the girl started refusing him, he allegedly took her out to his truck where he then raped her. And this is just a snippet of the woman's attorney describing what happened. So take a listen.
She went to go see her grandparents. She would go see him and stay with him for the summer. And they belonged to Cathedral Church. And Cathedral Church, which later became All Nations Church, was run by a man by the name of Reginald Wayne Miller. He goes by Wayne Miller, and he is the father of John Paul Miller. And one day, she went to church with her grandmother, and going through the sanctuary, she saw John Paul Miller. He saw her. She spoke to him briefly, and then she went to the bathroom. And she came out of the bathroom, and he was right there waiting for her, which was right beside, coincidentally, close to his father's office. He then took her and forced her through a hallway and into a car. He had his truck conveniently sitting right there by the exit, and he raped her.
So the complaint says that, quote, behind their religious facade, J.P. Miller and his dad engaged in sexual abuse and predatory conduct, often targeting minors. They used their positions of power to manipulate and exploit vulnerable victims while concealing their actions from the public. The woman is suing for negligence, civil conspiracy, assault and battery, and infliction of emotional distress. So some people, of course, are like, okay, well, why did she wait so long to talk about this? Why did she bring it up now? Why didn't she bring it up earlier? But we have seen so many cases where women have trouble coming forward simply because they're scared that nobody's going to believe them, that they would just rather move forward and forget. Or, you know, because there was such a power imbalance that the victim thinks they can't come forward. However, in this case, the anonymous woman said that she finally came forward because of another alleged assault in 2023. Also, an assault by J.P. Miller. She said that in 2023, the two of them ran into each other at Myrtle Beach. When she saw John, he leaned in to give her a hug, but then, out of nowhere, he stuck his hand down her pants and started touching her genitals. Take a listen.
As alleged in the complaint, and he came to her and went in like he was going to hug her, and as he did, he literally stuck his hand down her pants and grabbed her in the genital area. And there was a friend that was there with her.
And then when the woman confronted him about it, he allegedly tried to defend his actions by using a Bible verse, which, give me a motherfucking break right now. Like, I can't. He said, quote, "No man is without sin and temptation. God understands that." I mean, are you for real? Be for real right now. You're going to use scripture and Bible verses to excuse you putting your hands down a woman's pants uninvited and say, oh, no man is without sin and consequences. God understands it. It's okay. The audacity of this man. And this, again, you really got to go listen to the deep dive, guys, because this just illustrates to me, again, one more nail in his sorry ass coffin that he is a narcissist, that he thinks he can literally get away with anything. So this disgusting encounter that she had with him is what finally made her realize what happened to her when she was 14. And I guess it's what finally made her kind of process what all of it was and what it all meant. The lawsuit alleges that the Millers and other church figures had a pattern of covering up abuse over the years in the church, even going as far as calling it John Paul's sexual playground. Now, in addition to the 2023 assault, the woman's lawyer said that the death of Micah Miller is really what pushed this woman to finally report what happened. The woman said that Micah's death gave her this deep-rooted feeling of guilt, and she wonders if she had reported JP sooner, if maybe it could have done anything or somehow changed the outcome of what happened to Micah. The woman's lawyer said that her main goal is to bring this to light so that it never happens to another woman again. The last time we talked about him was November of 2024. And the reason we talked about him was because his house had been raided by the FBI and he was arrested. Now, at that time, police said that he was facing assault charges that were unrelated to Micah's death. He ended up being released on bond, but since then, there have not really been any updates on those assault charges. So far, JP hasn't responded to these new accusations either, and neither has his attorney or anyone in his family. So, you know, I will definitely be keeping an eye on this for updates, and I want to know what you guys think about this. It's like, again, what the expression, if it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck. It's a fucking scumbag JP Miller. I mean, it's honestly, like, how bad of a track record does this guy have to realize that he is like a skeezy, gross, disgusting human being? I apologize for cussing, but, you know, sometimes I get carried away here. Unfortunately, it's like, I don't know what the exact statute of limitations are, but even with Micah's death, it was ruled a suicide. With this, I don't know if he can be prosecuted for the actual sexual assault itself, but it's like this guy keeps getting away by the skin of his teeth. And I'm ready for him to just, like, you know, have a, in his words, come to Jesus moment and realize that the house of cards are falling down on him, because I'm so over this guy. I am so over this guy. He is just, in my opinion, a predator through and through. Now let's talk about some other predators that are on the streets out there. These real estate moguls, the Alexander brothers, because they're now facing even more sexual assault charges. We now have some updates on these real estate mogul brothers, and they're currently facing civil and criminal sexual assault charges. And they're now, in total, facing up to 24 lawsuits. But they also are still awaiting trial for federal sex trafficking charges. So investigators in total have spoken to over 60 alleged victims so far. And now the last time we talked about them, it was on a Headline Highlight episode back in December. And they are just such creeps. But let me give you a recap of what went down with them. So there are three Alexander brothers. Two of them are twins. Alon, Oren, and an older brother named Tal. They're all in their late 30s. So Tal and Oren worked as top real estate brokers, mostly in New York and in Miami. And then Alon worked with their family's private security firm. Now, if you don't remember, these guys lived a life that is like total luxury through and through. I'm talking mansions, private planes, boats, partying like there's no tomorrow. And look, I'm just going to say it. They probably went to a freak off or two if they were in Miami. Just gonna throw it out there. But as it turns out, they would use all of these luxuries that they had at their fingertips to lure women in and then make these women their victims. They would drug them, rape them, sex traffic them. They would find these women at parties or on social media and convince them to go on these lavish, luxurious trips all around the world or come attend their massive, huge parties. But these women would usually show up and just end up getting sexually assaulted. Investigators also talked about how there were group chats between the brothers, with all of them talking about which drugs they had available, what drugs they could use on these women, like how they could help each other out and like do each other a solid. The brothers would all work together, even with other men, all with the same goal of just being absolute gross sexual predators. And then when people started taking a closer look, the Alexander brothers had sexual allegations against them going all the way back to high school. These guys were just getting worse and worse and more confident over the years with nobody stopping them. And if you want a more in-depth explanation of their history and those allegations, you can listen to that Headline Highlights episode, and I will remember to try to link it directly in the show notes of this episode. So the brothers are currently all still being held in jail in New York. Originally, they did make bail, but then the judge rejected it, and they all had to stay locked up due to the severity of all of the accusations, and of course, the fact that these charges are federal. And ever since they were first arrested in December, more and more women have come forward to share their stories. But that's not all. The lawsuits that have now been filed are even now naming the brothers' parents, the Alexander family business, Douglas Elliman, which is the real estate firm that the brothers used to work at, and also somebody in the Hamptons who owned property that they would throw a lot of these parties at. The lawsuit says that Douglas Elliman, the real estate firm, enabled these brothers to act like this, to let them continue their little sex trafficking ring. The lawsuit went on to say that the executive of Douglas Elliman knew all about what the brothers were doing too, but never intervened. And another main enabler that the lawsuit named was the boy's parents. Allegedly, his parents were a massive part of the problem in all of this, and the lawsuit said that, quote, could not and would not have sex trafficked all of these women without the financial and other resources that were provided by their parents. which this is crazy if this is true, right? Again, it's all alleged at this point, but alleging that these people in power knew about what was going on and they did nothing, which, I mean, I guess when you really break it down, it's not all that surprising, especially when you think back to what's going on in Hollywood and how much people are covering up for people there. But still, it also doesn't matter if they're your sons, they're your precious little boys. Like, condoning this behavior is gross, but again, it's all just alleged at this point. Now, just this past week, 7 more women have come forward with allegations against the brothers, and they were also all filed in New York, which, let me just tell you, the experiences that these women are sharing, it's just absolutely spine-chilling, to say the least. And just a trigger warning here, I am going to share their alleged assaults so that you can understand the true gravity of the situation here. One woman said that in 2017 in Miami, Alon drugged her and tried to force her to have sex with him. This woman said no, telling him that she was on her period. But when she refused him, he allegedly ripped her tampon out and started forcing her to perform oral sex on him. One woman also said that she attended one of their luxurious Hampton parties and that she was given a drink by one of the twin brothers. She passed out after the drink, and when she woke up, the twins, both of them, were on top of her, taking turns assaulting her. Weeks later, she says, she realized that she was pregnant, and then one of the men who brought her to that party ended up paying for her abortion. A woman named Laura Buck also said that she was assaulted by the brothers in New York in 2010. She went on a dinner date with Tal, the oldest of the brothers, and then after that date, he sexually assaulted her. Laura also said that the other brother, Oren, and some other man, they watched and they filmed as this entire thing went down. Laura said that the next day she went to the hospital and she also spoke with the police, but they never filed a police report. She even started contacting friends of the Alexander brothers and even reached out to their mother to tell them what happened. But, surprise, surprise, nothing happened. The lawyer representing Laura said that she literally screamed it from the hilltops, but nobody cared. And these are just a few of the assaults that women have come forward with, and these men are just beyond sick. So I would imagine, even though it's all, again, alleged at this point, I would imagine that some of these charges are going to stick, because I don't think this many people, this many lawsuits, just are, you know, trying to target these guys for no reason and that they are without credibility. I doubt it. The brothers' parents have not released any statements or response to the accusations, and the brothers are all pleading not guilty. Their lawyers have called the lawsuits outrageous and, quote, frankly ridiculous. They continue to say that the brothers are innocent and that these women coming forward are all just trying to extort them, which only time will tell, but my belief is no, bro. I don't think that's the case. I mean, I'm sure this is not the end of hearing about what these brothers have done over the years. I frankly think it's just the beginning. But as of right now, they are staying behind bars and they're set to go to trial early next year. So we'll keep an eye on that for sure. Now let's talk about the person who I loathe more than anything in the world or anyone in the world. The one who really catapulted me into true crime, because I remember exactly where I was when this verdict was read. I remember my blood boiling and my hatred for her has no bounds. If you've guessed it and you guessed Casey Anthony, ding, 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 you are right. So many of you know how much I just detest this woman that when you noticed she was joining social media, when I tell you the amount of DMs that I got being like, are you okay? Have you seen this? What do you think? Because it's like, I appreciate you checking in on me because you know this woman just like irks my every fiber of my being. So Casey Anthony has joined social media, all while claiming to be an advocate. An advocate, okay. Now, for those of you who don't know, Casey Anthony is the mother who was accused and then acquitted of murdering her 2-year-old daughter, Kaylee Anthony, in 2008. Casey was 22 years old at the time, and she was charged because her 2-year-old daughter, Kaylee Anthony, was found dead near Casey's parents' home. It also took a whole month after not seeing baby Kaylee for somebody to report her as missing, and then she was found dead. And the whole time this was going on, Casey was lying her ass off to the police, lying to the media. She was saying that she worked at Universal Studios. She never did. She was getting, all while Kaylee was missing, she was getting tattoos that say the good life. She was getting drunk. She was partying. She was writing bad checks. She was saying that it was Zanny the nanny who abducted Kaylee. I mean, the list goes on. This woman is just, there needs to be a new word for her. You know what? You know, we take to Siri. Let's go. Here we go. Thesaurus. Siri, What's another word for vile?
Here's what I found.
Appalling, depraved, despicable, disgraceful, disgusting, horrid, humiliated. Humiliating. I like that. I like that, Siri. Thank you. What did Ariana say in the Vanderpump reunion? Oh, what was it? I forget. She called Tom something. Demented. No, it wasn't that. I can't remember. If you remember, let me know. But it was good. And that's what Casey is. She's just like a freaking the scum on the toilet, on the shit that the fly eats, that the fly poops out, that then a possum comes and eats and gets rabies from, and then the rabies infects, you know, a bat, and then the bat infects the world. I don't know. She's just disgusting. Okay, sorry. I'm going off the rails. So anyways, the reason I'm so mad is not only because what she allegedly did to her daughter, but because she was acquitted. And like I said, I remember where I was when that verdict was read, and it's just unbelievable to me. During the trial, the defense was saying that Kaylee had drowned in the backyard in the swimming pool of Casey's parents' house, George and Cindy Anthony, and that it wasn't Casey's fault. Casey also has since accused her parents of covering up her daughter's death by burying her body close to their home. She also has accused her own father, George, of sexually abusing Kaylee starting from when she was a little kid, and George has continued to deny this allegation. Prosecutors, on the other hand, had said that Casey used chloroform to poison and kill Kaylee and then pointed out all of the different lies that she spewed during the investigation. But for whatever reason, in 2011, Casey was very controversially found not guilty. The only thing that she was even found guilty of was lying to the police. And Casey remained relatively quiet for years until she did this stupid-ass Peacock documentary a couple years back, which I, like, just eviscerated her for on my channel. Maybe I'll link that, too, where I, like, pointed out all of the inconsistencies. But she tried to do this thing where it's, like, where the truth lies. And it was with Peacock, and that's where she spoke out for the first time in, like, over a decade, where she starts blaming her dad once again, where she says she's the victim in all of this, and even thinking about it, it just makes me so mad because this documentary was such a sham, and that's why I like just dismantled it one by one. But ever since that documentary, that piece of trash, she has been relatively quiet. Nice, like, thankfully, we like that. But now she's decided for whatever reason that it's in her best interest to join social media, and not just join social media, but do the biggest rebrand I've ever seen in my entire life, rebranding herself from alleged child baby killer to social legal advocate. I mean, read the room. So she posted a video on TikTok on March 1st where she reintroduces herself as though she needs to introduce herself to anybody. And she says that she is a quote legal advocate. And here is the video that she posted. And even if you've heard it, I want you to listen to the whole thing because it is absolutely absurd. It's about 3 minutes long. You can fast forward if you don't want to listen to the whole thing, but listen to how she says things because I find it very interesting. She even alludes to the fact that she's going to speak out again against her parents.
Today is Saturday, March 1st, 2025. This is my first of probably many recordings on a series that I'm starting. I am a legal advocate. I am a researcher. I've been in the legal field since 2011. And in this capacity, I feel that it's necessary if I'm going to continue to operate appropriately as a legal advocate that I start to advocate for myself and also advocate for my daughter. For those of you who don't know, my name is Casey Anthony. My daughter is Kaylee Anthony. My parents are George and Cindy Anthony. This is not about them. This is not in response to anything that they have said or done. That's not to say that I'm not going to respond at some point to some of the things that they have said and done. The whole point of this is for me to begin to reintroduce myself. I'm doing this both personally for me, but in a professional capacity. Moving forward, the majority of what you will see will be me speaking in a professional capacity. My goal is to continue to help give a voice to people, to give people tools and resources that they can utilize so they actually know where they can turn to. So with that, please join me on Substack. If you have questions, I will set up an email address where we can correspond directly. Up until this point, that has never happened. And it's only going to be on a limited basis regarding legal issues, legal matters. One of the main reasons that I'm doing this, There are people close to me who have been targeted and attacked recently. There are also people close to me who have had some recent things occur. And when necessary, people needed to step up, myself included. So as a proponent for the LGBTQ community, for our legal community, women's rights, I feel that it's important that I use this platform that was thrust upon me and now look at it as a blessing as opposed to the curse that it has been since 2008. With that, these aren't going to be perfect. They're not going to be edited. Most of the time, they're not going to be short. But I am proverbially standing in the light, embracing this piece, still going to keep my privacy intact. So you will get very comfortable with my car. And I will explain in great detail why it's so important for people to protect their privacy. It's not just important to public figures, it's even more important to private individuals. And with the current climate in our country especially, it's that much more important, which is why I am utilizing the Substack platform. Yes, I am advertising this and publishing this on TikTok, possibly also through other Meta platforms, but my intention is to separate from that and showcase even more why Substack is such an important resource for people to utilize moving forward. Anyway, I appreciate your time and we'll see how this goes.
So one thing that really got me here is when she says, I've been in the legal field since 2011. Actually, technically, Casey, you've been in the legal field since 2008 when you were on trial for murdering your daughter, your toddler daughter, by the way. And I also don't understand how she thinks she's going to, quote, advocate for her daughter when she's like, you know, as a legal advocate, I'm realizing that it's important that I also advocate for myself and for my daughter, Kaylee. No, leave Kaylee's name out of your dirty, trashy mouth. How are you advocating for your daughter? You are a killer who walked free, in my opinion, and now you're advocating for your victim, your own victim. Are you insane? It's like, I don't even think the word is narcissist at that point. Maybe it is, but there's got to be like something else, like compounded narcissism or complex narcissism. Like, you're going to advocate for your own victim? Be for real. Be for real. And then she just starts talking about how she's advocating for herself. Like, no. No, 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 no. You are not advocating for yourself. Nobody invited you here. You can't sit with us. Like, get off social media. I also think it is disgusting that she's joining social media where she is going to try to monetize. Because TikTok, you can monetize on. You join the creators program. It's not like you make a ton of money, but you definitely do make money. Substack, she also is going to be on. Which, by the way, I just started a Substack. I really enjoy it. Mine is totally free. It's at Annie Elise. You should go over there. It's like where you can post like more newspaper type true crime stuff. So whatever. But she's joining Substack, which I'm going to be really curious to see what she's using Substack for. But my point is, both of these platforms are monetized. So you mean to tell me she's now going to make money off these platforms using the story of her murdered child? It is sick. And she also said, quote, I feel that it's important that I use this platform that was thrust upon me. No, nothing was thrust upon you. You are just psycho and despicable. Then saying she's standing up for women's rights, for the LGBTQ community. No, I'm sorry. Get out of here. And if you watched the video of this TikTok, which if you haven't, you should after this, but it's my opinion that this was all crafted very strategically, which of course her like long-winded speech was crafted and scripted, no doubt about that. And she probably practiced it a million times, but I'm talking about even the angle, because in this speech that she gives, she not only talks about being a legal advocate, but she talks about how she wants to advocate for the LGBTQ community and how women's rights and all of that. And her phone doesn't move really during this, which makes me think it's fixed on the dash, which a lot of people do. But her arm is positioned in a way where you can see a tattoo on her bicep area. And I can't read what it exactly says, but it definitely looks to me to be a pride tattoo. There's rainbow, there's red text. And I just think that this is one more piece of her trying to flip the script, trying to be strategic to where it's like subtly in view, but not overly obvious. And then she's mentioning that she wants to advocate for this community. And I think she's trying to garner sympathy and like, I don't even know what the right word is. Like, people be like, oh, wow, like, look, she even has a tattoo for it. Like, it's just gross. I don't think anything that this woman does is genuine, is believable, or pure. Not at all. She also goes on to say that what happened in 2008 was a curse. Like, she referenced the death of her own daughter, which, by the way, she probably caused, that was a curse. She says that the hate and the ridicule that she has gotten since then is a curse, which no, girl, you did it all to yourself. So like I said, she also then loops in how she's starting Substack and that she's going to use TikTok to promote her Substack. And Substack is basically a page where there's an email address that she says people can communicate with her about legal matters. It's also where you can post editorial type content, video content, live streaming, things like that. It's just, it used to be more used with like newspapers and publications, but now influencers and creators are getting on there. So again, it's free. Go check it out. I'm on Substack. I even posted there the day that I saw that Casey Anthony joined social media, where I just went off, because over there I'm able to post in real time too. I don't have to worry about like recording, editing, or anything like that. So again, you can go check it out. But my biggest question in all of this is like, who would even want to take legal advice from you? Who is out of their mind enough that they would take legal advice from you? I mean, I guess technically, yes, you did get away with murder, so maybe there's something to it, but I don't think that was your brilliant mind. I think that was your scumbag attorney, Jose Baez, but who knows? I do think it's crazy, though, too, even more than that, is the fact that when I checked last, she had 50,000 followers on TikTok. Show your faces. Show your faces. If you are somebody who is following her, go ahead and unsubscribe from me right now, because we should not be giving this woman a platform to spew any nonsense. Not at all. So I want to know who these 50,000 people are, because you got to go get your head checked. I mean, truthfully, it's just so crazy to me that 14 years later, after all of this went down, she's now putting herself back into the public eye, trying to get social media fame, trying to earn money off of it. Again, it seems narcissistic to me, but I don't know. I just can't believe that she would think that this is a good idea. And she is getting eviscerated online because she's had to turn her comments off, which to me, I say, good, good. There was one comment, and I mentioned this in my, I posted on Instagram about this as well, and I mentioned it in that video, which you can follow me on Instagram. Again, I can post real-time updates there. It's the same handle, @_AnnieElise. But I saw a comment on one of these TikTok videos that I thought, it kind of made me laugh, but it also was really true. And it said something like, we may be divided as a country right now politically, but at least we're all united in our hatred for Casey Anthony. So to that, I say, united we stand. Like, I think we can all agree on that. So let me know what you guys think about all of this. I know we talked about a lot today. It seems like these episodes are getting longer and longer and longer. I also wanted to remind you, if you feel like you ever need more content to binge or you're running out of episodes, every Friday I put out extra exclusive content on Apple and on Patreon. You can get access on either one of those. Right now we have a library of about 75 episodes, and they're deep dives. They're like, well, I should say they're more mini deep dives, but they're on a single case. It's extra content. Last week we talked all about Brian Laundrie and the conspiracies about him being alive still, about the documentary that came out about Gabby Petito, all of that stuff. The week before that, we talked about this Thailand serial killer, but she was like the best friend serial killer. She would literally like poison her best friends. We talked all about that. And then this week, we're talking about a group of college students in Massachusetts who reenacted their own version of the TV show To Catch a Predator through TikTok, and how it ended up being such an epic disaster, how so many people have been like implicated now in this, and it's wild. So that one comes out this Friday. Other than that, I will be back with you first thing Monday morning with an all new deep dive. And if you didn't listen to the deep dive this last Monday, you definitely should. I mentioned how I watched Apple Cider Vinegar a few weeks ago on Netflix, but how while I was watching it, I was also like simultaneously on Reddit, on Google, on social media, trying to find every detail about Belle Gibson that I could. And there was so much that was left out of the Netflix series. Like we always say, right? They never leave it, put it all in. So I did a huge deep dive on Belle on Monday, and you can listen to that right now because it's out. So if you watched Apple Cider Vinegar, you may be interested in that. Even if you haven't, you should definitely listen. It's about this influencer who literally fooled everyone and conned millions and millions of dollars. She conned Apple. Like, it's bizarre. So you can go check that out. All right, guys, other than that, that's all I got for today for headline highlights. If you are not following the podcast yet, please take a quick second to do it. It is free. It's in whatever podcast app you're listening on. Just follow it so that you don't miss episodes. And as a little surprise, we did release a bonus episode yesterday about Gabby Petito. This is in addition to the one we did last week about Brian Laundrie, but it's about the big major key detail that Netflix left out of this documentary, of this docuseries. Why didn't they talk about Brian flying home to Florida after the Moab incident and then flying back to Salt Lake City to be with Gabby? And what transpired in those 5 or 6 days? And so I'm talking all about that in that episode. So that was a little bonus upload that we did yesterday. But again, follow the podcast so that you don't miss those little bonus episodes, because little secret, not so secret, there will be another one next week. So anyways, other than that, if you have an extra 30 seconds and you want to support the podcast for free, you can do that through Apple and leave a rating and review. All right, that's all I got. I'm going to shut up now. Have a great rest of your week, guys. I will talk with you again Monday. And until the next one, be nice. Don't kill people. Don't join any cults. Don't go near JP Miller and his skeezy ass. And please, please, please do not follow Casey Anthony. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.